Hi, this is Sheila.
Can you hear me? Good evening, this is Sheila. Can you guys hear me?
This is Frances. I can hear you.
Hi, Frances. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and put my phone on mute, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. I'm just waiting. Okay. We're just waiting for more people to join in and for the senator to join.
Super. I'll be listening. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Good evening, this is Sheila, who just joined.
Priscilla.
Hi, Priscilla. Welcome to the conference call. We'll just be waiting for a few minutes for the senator to call as well as others. Hello, this is Sheila. Who just joined the call?
Jeff Sessions. Sheila?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing well also. Thanks for joining us and making this possible tonight.
Thank you.
We have quite a few callers on. I'm just going to give us, if you don't mind, another minute or two to let people call in, and
okay.
Then we can get started.
Yeah, I don't hear any noises, but sometimes people forget to mute. But
yeah, I can mute. I'll mute everybody.
Remind them of it if it happens and you can hear stuff. But otherwise, yeah, that'll be good.
Sounds good. Okay, well, I haven't heard any other beeps, so let's just go ahead and get started. First, I just want to introduce myself. I'm Sheila Bannister. I'm the president of the Republican Women's Club in Madison, and we typically meet on the third Wednesday of every month at the Best Western Plus conference area for lunch and a guest speaker. Normally, but amid everything that's going on with COVID, we're not able to do that. So we've been setting up some calls to hear from candidates as well as other topics of political nature. And so I'm posting all of those on Facebook as well as our website, which is rwmadison.org. And so I'm glad that you guys could all join us and hear from Senator Sessions. We're very grateful that you could make time to talk to our group. I do want to let you guys know we're recording this. I know there's several people who wanted to join tonight but had conflicts, so we'll be posting this on our website as well. And just appreciate you guys making the time to join us, and especially you, Senator. So I will just turn the time over to you to get us started, and then we can do some questions at the end.
All right. That's good, Sheila. Thank you for letting me have the opportunity to share some thoughts with you and the group. I truly respect and value the work of Republican women, and Madison has had such a strong group over the years, and you played an important role in public policy that's gone from having two members of the Alabama legislature, when I remember those days, to now dominating every statewide elected official except Doug Jones. Needs to go. So we've got some real challenges to make that happen, and I intend to work toward that end. Just say a few things to you. I announced, we put out a letter Tuesday that laid out the details of my recusal. I hope you'll look that up. It's on our website, and don't hesitate to review it. I think it'll be helpful to you and provide good insight. I reject my opponent's view that doing the right thing, following the law, is somehow weak and irresponsible. I believe I did the right thing lawfully, as I was required to do, as the Attorney General, the top law enforcement officer in America, must do And I believe it worked to the benefit of the president. Although I got to tell you, I understand his frustrations. I saw these leaks. We all live with them. And it was a monumentally frustrating thing for the president. But he fought his way through it and remarkably advanced so much of that agenda that I supported. Maybe we can talk about recusal a little later in more detail, but I just want to say that. Secondly, it takes more than just being a voter and on the floor of the Senate. A good senator has to be effective in advocating, marshaling, working with the media, working with other senators, working with staffers, working with outside groups to advance our values and our agenda. It's a constant hard work. I believe I mastered that. I believe I had one of the best staffs in Washington. Many of them are still working with President Trump and just are doing a good job. And so I would say to you, a senator is an important thing. Another thing you should remember about the Senate is that a senator has to protect Alabama's interests, and there are no interests greater or more significant than the defense industry and NASA and Huntsville, the FBI now that I helped Senator Shelby bring there, working with Mo Brooks, working with Robert Adaholt and others. We've had one of the most remarkable sustained periods of advancement, protecting financing programs that were important to Huntsville over the years and expanding them. You got Lockheed, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, Boeing, all these companies that Lockheed's now building a missile plant in Cortland, going back out there. So these are the kind of things that I was involved in, and including United Launch Alliance and Decatur and all of that. So those are things that are important. Secondly, you want a senator who's not afraid to debate, who will stand up and advance the conservative, traditional, great values Alabamians have and be effective at it, not embarrass you in the process, but actually win battles. I've won battles, big battles, standing alone sometimes, whether it was almost alone on immigration. We stood virtually alone. I led the fight on blocking the Obama trade deal, the TPP. I was a big advocate for making the Democrats post the budget and do those kind of things. You've got to stay at it and know what you're doing. My opponent doesn't seem to be particularly interested in those issues. And you want to know where the senator is philosophically. Can you trust them? And so my opponent apparently never declared any political affiliation until 65 years of age. He didn't lift a finger for Donald Trump. He didn't give a dime to his campaign. He never said a kind word about him and certainly never even endorsed him. While I started as a teenager working for this Republican Party, when we lost election after election after election, but I believed in our cause. I believe what William Buckley said as a high school senior that I read in National Review cover to cover. He said the Republican Party is the one institution capable of preserving this republic. And I still think that's basically right. There's no other national entity that can impact the American philosophy and direction in the right way other than the Republican Party. We alone have to be effective and stop the left-wing Democrats, the socialist Democrats, the radical Democrats who threaten the very history and heritage of our country. I have great support from so many people. Jim Inhofe, who chairs the Armed Services Committee, he came to Huntsville to endorse me. He's had two events for me in Washington. He wants me back on his Armed Services Committee. He wants me to chair a subcommittee. Huntsville is so impacted by defense spending that that's a very, very, very important thing. Senator Shelby is supporting me strongly. He wants me back in the Senate as a partner because we were able to do things together. He chairs the Appropriations Committee, as you know, and that's extremely important. So we're talking about billions of dollars. And the conservatives, I think, understand who I am and support me locally and nationwide. I just mentioned a few things. Saturday, former Attorney General under Reagan, one of the greatest ever, Ed Meese, called me, told me he would do anything for me. He would call any conservative who doubted me to defend me. He would do a radio ad, whatever I needed. He's one of the most loved people in Washington from the conservative side and is a long-term leader at the Heritage Foundation. And also we posted today an op-ed by former Attorney General at that time, Bill Barr, Ed Meese, and Michael Mukasey, three great attorney generals under Republican presidents who were so complimentary of my tenure as attorney general. We really did a lot of great things that the president wanted and the people wanted, and I'm proud of that. Rick Manning just endorsed me vigorously a couple of days ago. He's the president of the Americans for Limited Government. Tony Perkins at the Family Research Council, Uni Smith and the Eagle Forum, Cheryl Lewis of the Alabama Citizens for Life, the ICE Officers Council endorsed me strongly and said I was the number one official in all of Congress in support of them and their mission. House and Senate, 535 members, I was their number one most effective person. Because Sheriff Kevin Turner there is a supporter officially and openly. Dale Strong, the great and open advocate for me. Dale, by the way, was just ranked number five in the state for being the most influential state leaders in the state. He's ranked number five, so I'm proud of Dale and glad to have his support. Speaker McCutcheon is supporting me too, and a lot of others. So I just would say that to you, that we've got much to do. We need to complete the wall. We need to end illegal immigration and create a system that serves the national interest. I'm laying out a plan that I learned a lot about as Attorney General and knew about before, to stand up to China and reset our relationship for the next 100 years with the number one strategic adversary of the United States, and that's China. And we're going to continue to battle for our law enforcement community. We're going to continue to battle for great federal judges who follow the law, not make law, not activist judges, but judges with discipline and integrity, and just generally be supportive of the agenda of the president and good conservative Republicans, because we've got some momentum. We're going to have a great window of opportunity. I can hit the ground running. My opponent brags about not knowing anything. Well, you can be an outsider, and you can vote against a incumbent politician if they've gotten lazy on you, if they don't fight for your values, if they don't have principles, if they're not a person of integrity, if the issues they stand up and fight on are not what you believe, you should vote them out. But I believe I have done the opposite. I believe I got more effective in the further I was in the Senate. I didn't get lazy. I didn't sell out to special interest or the politically correct crowd or liberal newspapers. I stood effectively, honorably, and not embarrassingly for our values. And I think that's what we need now. And if you give me the chance to return, I'll continue to fight just like I did before. I have not changed. I'm the same Jeff Sessions you knew before. All right, Sheila, I'll be glad to try to answer some questions.
Okay, thanks so much. So I've received several questions, and so maybe we can just start there. I know you briefly talked about the recusal, and I did post on our Facebook page your letter to the editor, I believe it was, that was in the Montgomery Advertiser.
Yeah, good.
But one of the specific questions that I get from people, and I think what they're not understanding, so maybe you can give some more detail around, is why you didn't tell the president that you would need to recuse yourself before you accepted the AG position.
Well, everybody knew as much about the situation as I did, and there was no formal no formal investigation public of the Trump campaign, and that's what I could not participate in. 3 weeks later, after I was confirmed, or maybe later yet, Comey said at a hearing that there was an investigation of the campaign, which caused quite a stir, as you can imagine. But I was briefed on it right after I became Attorney General, and that's when I knew we had to decide what to do about recusal. And I was told that. So I reviewed the law. I talked to department officials and read the law carefully. It's very clear and very strong. So I would just mention 3 points to you and to each of you because they're important. Number one, I had a real role in the campaign. I didn't just endorse Trump and make a speech or introduce him as I did in Huntsville and endorsed him, at least in Madison. I did a lot more than that. I was with him. I traveled all over the country. I went to Mexico with him during the campaign, Arizona, California, New Hampshire, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Florida. I traveled all over. I had an official title as chairman of the National Security Committee. I also knew that in any investigation of the campaign, I was going to be a witness. In fact, Carter Page and George Papadopoulos were members of the National Security Committee that I chaired, although I hardly knew them. I'm not real sure how they got on that list, but they did. And then finally, they were looking at me. They accused me of having an improper relationship with the Russian ambassador. So it's pretty clear, just under normal rules that the DA in Huntsville, Robert Broussard, and any other DA in Alabama would follow, that you can't investigate yourself. You can't investigate an entity of which you played a significant role, and you can't be supervised an investigation in which you're going to be maybe an important witness in. So that's how that happened, and it all just spun up, and it was very frustrating for the president. And there's no doubt that we've disagreed about what my duty was.
Okay, thank
but
you.
I respect him. I respect his agenda. I supported it. Some have said, a lot of conservatives said at the time that no cabinet member did a better job of supporting President Trump's agenda than Jeff Sessions did at the Department of Justice. We just had this disagreement over recusal.
Okay, thank you. So if you were reelected, what would be your top priorities in the first 100 days going back into office?
Well, there are a lot of things that we'll do. First, we want to be sure we're protecting interests of the state, make sure Huntsville, and particularly it's nothing more, no place in Alabama is more impacted by Washington than Huntsville. The billions of dollars that flow in there are just incredible. So you always got to do that. I mean, really, it's no little deal. It's billions at stake. Secondly, though, we have an opportunity to fix immigration and get it under control. The wall is going to be a big part, but Congress needs to get off its duff, and a lot of these Republicans have been sitting there without doing anything to help the president close loopholes that are driving the Border Patrol and our ICE officers crazy. I hired double the number of immigration judges. That's one of the things the Department of Justice does, is provide judges for the border cases. But great Scott, it's still so many people use loopholes to demand hearings after hearings after hearings that are improper. So you need to end illegal immigration. Right now, as Attorney General, I learned just how dangerous China is to us. I started at that office the China Initiative. We found there were virtually zero cases being prosecuted by the Obama administration. There are now at least 50 cases, probably more, ongoing against China entities. Lots of professors and others who've been getting money from China while pretending to be not and hiding it, among other kinds of thefts of intellectual property and so forth. So we need to pursue aggressively. aggressively and support the president and encourage him to be tough on China. We need a hearing on the virus. The whole world needs to know out in the open that China lied. They covered up. The Chinese people need to know their communist government lied and covered up. And we need to develop, really, Sheila and members, a bipartisan foreign policy to deal with China. We have to be bipartisan. It has to be like it was when we stood up to the Soviet Union. The old George Kennan long telegram that laid out what became the containment policy. I'm not saying that's the exact same policy, but we need, and it was bipartisan. Both parties supported. They disagreed over details, but not over the fundamentals. We need to establish that, and I'm going to work on that. So those are some big things that will be ongoing, and I'll always battle for a law enforcement community. I'll battle for the great federal judges and that kind of thing.
Great. So speaking of the COVID crisis or whatever we want to call it right now, just want to know what your point of view is on how both state officials and U.S. officials have responded to the situation, and what are some of the struggles you think we should anticipate going forward in coming months and years as a result of not only the pandemic happening, but also with the economy being shut down for so long?
Wow, it is one of the most dramatic events in history. I guess if you're familiar with that phrase, black swan, this is a black swan event, life-changing and unexpected. So, yes, that's where we are. First, let me say that although it is tremendously impactful to the United States, the president and his team have been unfairly attacked from the very beginning. For example, among developed nations, deaths on a per capita basis are lower here than in 10 European nations. 10 advanced European economies have higher death rates than we have here. Brussels has three times the deaths per capita, or at least Belgium does, as we do. Italy, England, France, Spain, I think are all at least double what we are here. So this is just a very, very difficult pandemic. The University of Southampton in England said that if China had told the world 3 weeks earlier, 95% of these infections would not have occurred. But we now know that China knew it was infectious and contagious in early December, but didn't warn the world until January 20th, 7 weeks later. So this was allowed to spread throughout the world. China's fingerprints are all over it. No country has been able to successfully just shut this down. No advanced economy with a lot of mobile people and with people who travel around the world and picked it up. So I do think that the president's wrestling with a very, very difficult challenge. I'm comfortable and willing to support what he's saying, and I think the criticism is overboard.
Okay. So going back to immigration and getting an agreement, getting rid of these loopholes, what do you think it's going to take to get bipartisan agreement in moving this forward and just getting, because we've been talking about this for years now, on getting
right.
This immigration.
You're exactly right. I think one of the greatest threats we have to us is people give up and don't think it can happen. But the president is driving. That's the difference. This president is forcing that matter. He's gotten the wall started and on the way to be completed. He's increased officers, and he's determined to do what he can. I think on this issue, unlike maybe China, that we're just going to have to hold the Democrats up and expose them for their radical open borders position. It is an absolutely unjustified, incredibly radical position that anybody can come into America illegally. We don't care about it. Nobody can be deported, even as the sanctuary cities and states say, even if they come into the country illegally, sell dope, murder somebody, we still don't deport them. I mean, this is the height of lunacy. So we've created a policy that says basically if you get in the country illegally, you can just stay. That cannot be. The president's changing that, and if he wins this election, and I think he will, we'll have some momentum, and we've got to take our case to the American people, and we've got to expose some of these radical senators and congressmen, and we're going to have to use that issue to vote them out of office. That's just the way it's got to be, because I don't think right now they're willing to just sit down and talk about it. I think we could perhaps talk with people about a new China policy. But right now, they're so dug in on immigration and so radical in their views that I think it's just going to take a big fight. The president's made some progress. We got more to make, and I think we can. And this would be the one opportunity to create a lawful system of immigration that serves the national interest, one that we can be proud of. We admit 1.1 million people to permanent residence in the United States on a guaranteed path of citizenship. But we're bringing in right now 1.4 million people as temporary guest workers simply to take jobs when this economy has no jobs. You know, I led the charge on that a few weeks ago, and the president picked it up. Other members of Congress have. We cannot keep bringing in foreign workers when we laid off now. We've got 30 million people unemployed. So that's the kind of insanity that we're operating on, and I think the relief bill that the Democrats are proposing now advocates for even more assistance to illegal people and bring in even more illegal workers.
Okay. So you've talked about this a little bit earlier, but would like to get some more information from you on how you differ from your opponents, both Tommy Tuberville and Doug Jones. And if you could maybe elaborate a little bit more on, because obviously you have ideological differences, but also just the skills that you bring to the table, how that differs from your two opponents.
Well, good. I have a proven record, first and foremost. You know me. You know I know about the issues. I care about them. I've studied them since I was a teenager, and I have confirmed philosophical Republican conservative convictions that have never wavered. I would say about Tommy Tuberville, we don't know what he really believes, but he said some very, very troubling things. When the China pandemic broke and I demanded action, he said we can't worry about China now. That's his direct quote. Later, I think in the same interview or another radio interview the same day or so, he said that China controls everything, but it'll take care of itself. On immigration, he said in December that there are 400,000 Indians with skills who want to come here. We want them to come here. He said also previously, he said that the people that come across the border, these were the illegal groups, they just want jobs. We want them to have jobs. We just want them to know who they are. We want them to be citizens. That cannot be the policy. That is not Donald Trump's policy. With regard to China, he said that the president's policy on China was wrong. With regard to trade, he said he was 100% free trader, not a fair trader. He was 100% free trader and opposed tariffs. That's contrary to the American First agenda of Donald Trump. That's the establishment rhino policies. And he's accused me of being weak because I did the right thing. And I don't appreciate that. He basically accused me of being dishonest. I don't appreciate that. I've done my best my entire time in the United States Senate to be honest, to stand for principle, do the right thing, to follow the law, and try to make this country better, just like all of you believe. And I don't appreciate it. So I don't think he's ready to be senator. I don't think he understands the job. And I don't think he needs to be our senator. I mean, just think about it. We're going to send somebody to the senator who just a couple of years ago never evidenced any political speech in his life. Secondly, Doug Hale's our great first Republican from Huntsville. Doug Jones is a total Chuck Schumer acolyte. He is a step stool for Chuck Schumer. He wants to have Chuck Schumer as the majority leader of the United States and to replace Mitch McConnell or whoever the Republicans appoint. And if the Democrats get a majority in the Senate, as he desires, every single committee will cease to be chaired by a Republican like Jim Inhofe and Richard Shelby, and they will all flip to Democrats, and so many of them are radicals. He opposed Kavanaugh. He voted to impeach the president on this bogus charge, the Ukrainian flapdoodle. I went on TV, national TV, 11 times and defended President Trump against the impeachment charges there. It was nowhere close to a legitimate impeachment charge. Doug Jones cannot represent Alabama. He is advocating for national democratic values, not Alabama's. It's a tragedy and cannot continue that man represents us. It's just not conceivable. So I intend to take him on, square on. I've been vetted. They've looked at me every year because I stood up to the Democrats, and they always look for weaknesses. I have fought them. I've been a leading advocate. And so I can win this race against Doug Jones. But he's got $10 million, I think. Whoever wins our primary is not going to have any money because we're going to spend it on our runoff July 14th. And so somebody with name ID, a proven record, who's been vetted, can win this race. We're not, unless we screw it up some way. I'm ready to win it, would give my total best effort to it, and if you allow me to return to the Senate, I'll do my best to continue to be effective in advocating our values.
Great, thank you. So I just want to be mindful of the time. We're just past 6:30, so just want to give you an opportunity to say some closing remarks, and then we'll end this call and let everybody get back to their evening.
Well, thank you, Sheila. This is a great opportunity. I guess I kind of said what I wanted to say. I want you to know that I've not changed my values, that being a senator is more than just casting a vote. You'd like to have a United States senator not only that's knowledgeable about issues, but is actually passionate and cares about them and will fight for them. NRA has endorsed me. Charlton Heston came down for me a number of years ago and campaigned for me. He had this long speech. It was so brilliant, so beautiful. He memorized it word for word. And he said, concluded with, in a leader, you want to know what they'll fight for and what they'll die for. I think you know my values. I think you know what I believe. I think you know that I created one of the best staffs in Washington, that we worked extremely hard. I went to every county in Alabama every year for at least 18 years to make sure I know this state and listen to their concerns. I'm ready to go back. My opponent is not, and he's just not. And so if you give me the chance, I'll try to be worthy of the trust that you would have placed in me. I've said that repeatedly. I think a public official who receives the trust and confidence of his constituents should be worthy of that and understand what an august trust you've been given and responsibility. And I'll say one more thing. Anybody can endorse in the Senate race in Alabama, but it's our people's race. It's Alabama's race. Two times before, Washington has said to vote for somebody that did not win. And I just know that the people of Alabama need to ask themselves who can best represent our values and advocate our values, who will be best to help President Trump be successful. I think, so therefore I'll ask you for my support, your support, and will promise to do my best to be faithful and effective on your behalf. Sheila, I think that wraps me up, unless you've
Great.
Got something else.
Nope, that's it. Thank you so much, Senator, for joining us, and thank each one of you who's on the call for joining us, and watch for more information on our website and our Facebook page for more calls like this, as well as the latest and greatest political info. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you.